that. Yeah. I think that there are a lot of people who, students in particular, who have maybe transitioned into, you know, are now 18 and can vote, but wouldn't think that that's just, it's that straightforward. And I think we need to do a better job of, you know, outreach to younger people to get them to vote, right? So yeah. There's, you know, there's students, when I guess it's, sometimes it's deceiving to me because I'll, you know, a political concert professor, when I see these students who would probably, not even all of them, but a lot of them would have a better sense or would be motivated to do so. But, you know, who's speaking to the students in a biology class or a business class and who are 18 and just, you know, overwhelmed by trying to get A's and trying to, you know, keep their head above water, and the idea of voting. And I think it makes, you know, when we're talking about here, I can't imagine that a lot of students in those types of courses and programs are getting a lot of political education or motivation or any kind of influence other than, unless their family is particularly political or friends, right? Then other than that, if their circle is not political, then it's likely that they will sort of continue that trend.
Yeah, so you're thinking that more kind of targeted outreach to younger people and students in particular coming onto university campuses and explicitly telling them how simple it is to sign up and just providing more outreach on the subject would be a way of increasing voter turnout. What other steps would you like to see the government take for improving outreach to students?
Well, I would, so like you read the platforms and I read them, but I really can't remember at this point the details. But what I can do, what I can say is that there isn't, like I think we've already mentioned this, but if you think, well, when you say the government, I mean, obviously the party in power would be sort of control in sort of the policy agenda of any government of the day. But let's assume that in a system like BC, at this point, we're kind of moving to, we've always generally had a two-party system, but now we have a different two-party system as the BC Liberals have folded and the BC Conservatives become sort of the main center-right alternative. If we look at those platforms, I don't really see either of the parties speaking directly to young people in a way that would resonate, right? Is that what do young people want? They want to know, well, can I afford my education? And what does that mean? You know, how can that happen now? And why is my education so unaffordable? Why is it that the job market is so challenging in British Columbia for young people to enter? Why aren't there more opportunities to sort of bridge from university into internships and things like that in various careers? Why is it so elitist? Because there's only certain kinds of programs and offer those things that are more expensive and often more challenging to get into, which again, you know, we have a liberal society, competition is fine, but there also needs to be opportunities across the board for different sort of spectrums of students who are entering university. And I think it's, you know, it's on us to provide that. And I don't think we do, right? We sort of like throw up our hands and say, well, you know, just keep your head down, work hard, and, you know, you'll figure it out. But I don't think that's enough. I think we need to do more. So I guess to sort of answer your question simply from what I've been saying is that, like, if I'm a student right now and I see that, or I don't see anything, for me, why am I going to vote? is a better question, right?
Mm. Do you think that maybe if there was a different way of delivering the kind of proposed policies during, like, campaigning before election, rather than, like, hefty documents that are very detailed, putting something, I don't know, maybe on social media might increase young people's engagement with it if the information was presented in a much, more simplified kind of way?
That's kind of stretching my knowledge because I'm not an expert on the social media politics. That's an area that's developing, and there certainly are people who could speak with more depth on that. And I do think that the parties, to varying extents, have tried that. I don't know how convincing it is, especially when, you know, we think about the leaders and their ability to communicate to younger people. I'm just speculating here, but looking at hearing David Eby give his talks and hearing the Conservative leader give his talks during the campaign, you know, neither really, I don't think either really effectively, I never heard either effectively talk to young people in a way that would speak to them. As someone who is, you know, at this point, a very old millennial who has students who are much younger than me, but I know them and I speak to them. And so I can't imagine that connection was strong given the communication style I saw from both of them. So would putting them on a TikTok make a difference, is to answer your question? I'm not sure. You'd have to ask students themselves. And I would suspect no. I don't think it's necessarily about the medium, but the message would be my presumption. But again, someone who has more expertise in this would know. And again, we know that obviously students spend more time on social media than engaging with traditional news, which is fine. Mm-hmm. That's just the way the world is sort of evolving. There's other, you know, I think issues arise with that with sort of information certainty as to what you're getting on social media. But I think if it's coming from the official parties and they're using it properly, that's great. But there's no indication as of yet to say, well, definitively that is helping, right? There's no one party really coming out in the lead in terms of like social media engagement. They're all doing it, but I don't know if they're all doing it. I wouldn't say that any of them are doing it particularly well.
Yeah, because I was going to say when I was researching around this topic a while ago, I didn't see a lot of things on social media. I kind of went straight to websites and to find the platforms that way. But I did tune in to the TV debate that happened. And they said it was like the only TV debate to happen for it. And I found it quite interesting when I was watching it and I was making notes and listening to, I think all three parties were kind of did it, but the Conservative Party leader more in saying that addressing, he was like, I'm for young people, I'm here to represent young people, but there was a failure to say how. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all great to say, mm-hmm. I'm for young people, I'm all of my like policies are going to help young people, but there was like a failure of how are they helping young people, what areas, what issues, and why is that specifically affecting young people? Mm-hmm. With kind of, there's ideas floating about globally on how to further engage youth in voting. I wondered what your thoughts would be on initiatives such as lowering the voting age to more like 16 rather than 18.
Yeah, so we have some examples, I believe. Again, I remember at least in the referendum, and you probably more familiar with this, in Scotland, I recall they lowered it to 16. And is the voting age in Scotland 16 for the Scottish elections? I think
it might be. I'm not entirely sure. I know it's UK is 18 for the UK elections, for Scotland itself, I'm not entirely sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, examples, I do remember when that, during the Scottish referendum, how engaged it seemed. Like, again, I'm just, this is from a third party, from a perspective, from an outsider perspective. But, you know, I think there's the possibility that there's no reason to think 18 is some magic age, right? What is the magic age? Is it 14? Is it 16? Right? Even in the upcoming Liberal leadership, I'm not going to quote an age because I might get it wrong, but I know it's lower than 18, or at least it was in the prior, when Justin Trudeau won the leadership in 2013, it was less than 18. I don't think they're planning to bring it back to 18. I know they're changing the rules and restricting it to citizens this time, citizens and permanent residents, but they're not changing that. So the idea, there is feelings and energy out there outside of official statewide elections, which are like the UK and Canada are good examples, that are still at 18, right? So I think those examples give us reason to think about it. There's no reason just to, you know, stay with what has been in place because 18 somehow seems like the age we've always had, so therefore stick with it. Would lowering it really, but I think that it comes back to the question we talked about earlier, is like if we still look at the data over time, if like 18-year-olds aren't voting on par with 55-year-olds, then why do we think lowering the voting age is going to be that much more useful in terms of engaging youth? Mm. I mean, I don't think it's morally or ethically wrong. I think actually that's something to think about, because I think we, even at 16, public policies and what government does affects your life greatly and can have great effects on your future prospects. So I do think if somebody wanted to vote and has engaged, I think that they should be able to at that age. So I guess, you know, I don't really have a good answer to say that I support initiatives to consider lowering the voting age. I certainly would not be in favor of raising it. And I don't think 18, there's any kind of reason to believe from the examples we have across the globe that 18 is somehow the magic number.
Yeah, because I know England has floated the idea a bit over recent years about potentially lowering the age for the election across the UK to 16, with a lot of there was actually a lot of traction, I think, with young people, particularly I think 16-year-olds. The gap between 16 to 18, a lot of people when I was that age were going to protests for climate action. There was a big push for that when I was, I think, around 17, and a lot of the people were saying, if we're pushing for issues like this, we should be given the right to vote on them. It's gonna affect us. Like, waiting a year doesn't change anything about how it affects our futures. I also know that there's there is talk about the capping the voting age of when do you not become cognitive enough to be making a decision. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
The idea, well, that would be a question for sort of developmental psychology, more so than me. I mean, I don't, you know, like your ability to sort of make, you know, rational decisions. Mm. Well, I'm not even sure adults are always rational. So I'm not sure that, I don't really have a whole lot of insight into from the sort of biological perspective as to when it should be. Again, I think of it more from the perspective of like at what age do you have potentially a stake in our society's future. Mm. And when you're 10, would that be unreasonable? Maybe, right? Like 12, I think still, but I think when you're getting into the 14 to 16 range, as opposed to 18, is when I really start to think about people who have independent opinions, visions that are different from their parent about what they want society to look like, and have different ways of engaging. So I do think around that age is when it feels like your political maturation for many people could happen. And so to restrict those people from voting seems unfair, even though there wouldn't necessarily be a huge pool of voters, and I highly doubt they would make a huge impact on the election per se. But I don't think that's a good enough reason not to consider, you know, experimenting with lowering it.
Interesting, yeah. With student organizations, I did a discussion with the student-led NDP, the kind of group that's on campus. Do you think they play a significant role in kind of youth engagement with political, I guess, news and voting? Because I know they spoke about how they see themselves as bridging a gap between provincial politicians and students to provide better engagement. I wonder if you have any thoughts on whether you think that is kind of a significant role, whether it's been successful at all or...
Well, I mean, from what I can see, the students that I've had in the past who've been involved with those activities, so whether it's at the NDP and prior, it's quite a few students who were involved with the BC Liberals and did sort of similar kinds of work. And I think it does seem like a useful, it does seem useful because I do think that students are much more effective at speaking to other students, especially those who are deeply engaged with the parties and can communicate the sort of broader issues and bring down and really parse through what is relevant to students. And I've heard, you know, some really eloquent speakers in my classes who are those types of people. So I do think if more people would engage with them, I do think that's a really helpful way to do it, right? You're more likely, for example, I often get a comment that I think I do reasonably well as a professor and I get, reasonable good comments, but a lot of students will just say, you know, he was intimidating at first, or he uses too many, you know, big words when he lectures or things like that. And I've worked on that over the years to try to sort of smooth that out and do the best I can. But there's no way that with my age, with my experience, like with what I do in my time outside of the classroom, that I can always understand exactly to meet students exactly where they are. I try to, but it's challenging, right? And so I think but also I can provide obviously like a lens through an academic and combination of, you know, real world knowledge that is unique. But I also think students themselves, the ones who are engaged, can provide something unique is what you're kind of providing. And I do think it's more important. I wish that those groups would be more active and that they would be ideally less partisan than what I've seen. But that's just sort of the nature of the game, I guess. Right. So,
yeah. What specific issues do you think that students that might be listening out there should be maybe paying attention to or should be looking into more for the upcoming federal election?
Yeah, so I would urge students to think about, well, first of all, it depends on what your immediate goals are. You would imagine that for most students, it's entering the labor market. It's trying to find to gain independence from their parents. I mean, not everybody, but some people want that, whether it's renting or potentially buying in the future. A lot of students are interested in, continue to be interested, and they should be, in climate change and what a future government is, how they're going to manage environmental concerns. Again, something that's fallen off the agenda, but something that students, especially at this age, should and continue to be vigilant about holding their government to account. So those are, you know, three good ones that I can think of, right? And all of those things, I would say that let's imagine that the polls play out as they are and we have a Polyev-led conservative majority. I'm not sure that he has really spoken about any of those things in a way that would give students clear knowledge as to what he plans to do. Yeah, you know, we have on housing, we have, you know, build the houses, right? And, you know, there is there are obviously policy ideas related to sort of dealing with municipalities in a way that's more strict and sort of things like that. It isn't particularly different from what has been done in the past, or whether or not who copied who is not really my concern at this point. But to sort of answer your question, I do think that to really make that happen, especially in our bigger cities, I'm not sure that I've really heard a particular kind of, you know, unique solution yet. And I think that students should be vigilant about sort of looking into that and sort of demanding that kind of answer. They should be interested. They should also be for a country that's stalling in its productivity as to what is, you know, what does a future government have to say about that? Why has it happened? And what are they doing to sort of get us back on track so that there's, so the economy can create more jobs that students can enter, right? Mm. Is that there's not much, there's only so much value in a sort of knowledge-based education, even if it's not specific to a certain discipline, but there is value to it if there is an economy that's dynamic and creating jobs in different areas that we don't quite know yet. That's where a university education in anything can make you more of a viable candidate to get that job. But if our community is not creating those things and we're only resource dependent, that's not necessarily going to be good for those students who are coming out of university. So they need to be vigilant about that. And yeah, but the environment, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. I mean, we've seems to be a consensus that the consumer-based carbon tax is dead. I don't have a strong opinion one way or another. But the point is, I think that we need to understand more, okay, if that's not working, then what is going to work? It's not just that, oh, this didn't work, so let's give up. What is going to work, right? Yeah. So those are, I think, the things I would want to know if I was a student.
Yeah, okay, very, very interesting. With now BC being an NDP government again after the election, beyond kind of like tuition and funding, what long-term educational reforms are you wanting to see as a professor?
I would love to see more. Well, I'd like to see smaller classrooms. I do think that, you know, the era of the sort of big lecture might be dead. I don't know if it's not fully dead, but I do think, having been teaching for over a decade now, that I've really seen the limits of what I can offer my students in the large lecture setting. There's something to it. I'm not saying it, you know, it's not completely ineffective, but we can do better than this. I also think that there needs to be stronger ties between the labor market and universities. Not to say that we want to become trade schools. I think that is probably a recipe for disasters, because we can't train people to do jobs we don't even know exist yet, or to move through the labor market fluidly if we teach them how to hammer a nail. I mean, people need to learn. There are people who need to go to the trades and that's great, and do other things. But those who go to university need to be broadly educated, you know, able to sort of have both quantitative reasoning skills, writing skills, logical thinking skills, critical thinking skills, communication skills, both verbally and written, even as though, and learn to use AI effectively to complement their own intelligence. And these kinds of things, I think, are challenging for professors to provide, because we, you know, the demands of sort of our jobs administratively and research and teaching and all these things, without a lot of help to how to move things, how to make things better for students, without a lot of feedback from the labor market, is challenging, right? And I think a lot of professors end up sort of falling back on what they've always done. And I think for many feel like it's ethically wrong to continue doing that, but don't really have much sort of wiggle room to try to improve things. Because, you know, ultimately we do know that in educated societies tend to be wealthier and more productive than ones that aren't. So it's not like we shouldn't shut down universities, and it sounds like I have best interests, but I do think that's like just logically true. But we do need to do better at actually having a more dynamic approach to curriculum and teaching than we do now.
I find it interesting that you speak about having smaller class sizes, because one thing I've noticed in my lectures back home is I do sociology and criminology, which combines two different kind of degree areas. And we also have people from like media and communications taking the same modules as us. So we end up sitting in a lecture room of like close to 200 people. And I find that sitting in there is very little engagement, active discussion or anything with the professors. The lecturers will end up asking a question, and if no one wants to contribute, they just move past it. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if potentially reducing the size of that, people would be more interested in speaking up and having a discussion, because you're not just sat like at the back like a speck in the room because of how big all the classes are.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a question then. Mm. I mean, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no.
Considering the SFU, your time at SFU, have you taken any classes that have tutorials associated with the lectures, and how have you found those to be a complement to your learning?
Yeah, see, I actually, I'm technically not a student here. I'm just working at the station. I haven't actually attended any lectures or classes or anything. But from the people that I've spoken to about what they say, they seem way more actively engaged than any of my friends at uni, or even I would say myself at uni, in lectures. And the way that they have way more of a rapport with their professors than we do. I find university back home, the professors are more like the teachers in high school. You don't really see them outside of the classroom. You don't really go up and talk to them afterwards. You just go to your next class. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how the university system, for me and my friends, of what we've spoken about, is. I have a friend that does psychology, and she sits in a room of over 500 students for her lectures. And she's like, no one talks. We don't do group presentations. We sit, we listen to the lecturer, read their slideshow, and then we go. And that's it.
Right. I wonder, I wonder if there's some, I would say that we, I'm happy to be at SFU compared to, say, larger schools where there's a little bit more engagement through tutorials. I do think that some of that deficit, some of that benefit is undermined by the fact that it's a commuter campus and we tend to not have students who are around enough to actually sort of take advantage of it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think that that's like a major a problem and something that, you know, if you first part of the learning process and mentorship can only happen if there is, right, you know, you build relationships with those who teach you. It's not going to happen in every class, but there should be multiple opportunities to do that throughout your degree. And I do think that, you know, that's something that SFU does better than, you know, some schools that I know, I have colleagues who work at. It's not the best. We could be better. And I think there's more work to be done. But I also wonder, and this is another question for you, like, do you, but I guess you haven't been in classes, it's hard to say, but I do think there might be a cultural difference, because I've heard things about the UK university system that sort of like the professors are treated and expected to be more distant because that's the sort of culture of university there, rather than here, where there at least younger professors tend to be a bit more cognizant of the fact that engagement and sort of teaching students at their level and is just a good thing to do. Not, it doesn't make you, you know, it's not, your job is not to demonstrate how smart you are to them, but to engage with them.
I don't really know. I mean, I think it's become much more of a shared experience with friends I have at different universities in the UK, where we all kind of have this idea that we don't really get to speak to our lecturers or professors. There's not much rapport going on. When I spoke to my parents when they went to university like 30 years ago in the UK as well, and they said it was very different for them. They spoke a lot with their professors. They had rapport, but they also said that was at a time where not everyone was going to university. Now it's pretty much expected most people, after they've done their exams, are going to university. Very little will go on to straight into working or apprenticeship or something. University is like more of the path to follow. Mm-hmm. So they wondered if potentially it's just because more people are at university. There's more people. What's been quite interesting for me is coming over here, I have a supervisor that I keep in contact with at my university, and he has three students that are out on placements doing what I'm doing. And that's the most rapport that I've had with a professor in what is now my third year at the university, which I find quite interesting. Is it's when I'm away and they actually have designated you to a professor that you actually end up having more of a rapport with them. And he's been my lecturer for 2 years, so I've been in his classes before as well. Mm-hmm. But it's just quite interesting how different it plays out here at university from what I've spoken to people versus back home, because we just, I think it's treated very differently, university. And I think also students don't make as much of an effort now to try and build that rapport with professors or ask questions. There's a lack of interest to engage in the lectures and just to go out and do reading and then just write the essay that way, rather than like a genuine vested interest in potentially the topic or expanding knowledge by talking to the person that's the expert in it and talking to you about it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat today. I know we've been trying to get this set in stone for a little bit of time.
Yeah, no, sorry about that. The end of December is a tough time to find the time. And,
absolutely. Well, I'm glad we could have this chat, and thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
After all of the pain, you still like making me pay. Do you like music, or do you like technology, or do you like talking to people? CGSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CGSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit cgsf.ca.